Blog Talk Radio.
This is Silvio Canto in Dallas, Texas, on Wednesday, October the 30th, and today we're going to chat with our friend George Rodriguez down in San Antonio, and as we always do, we'll update you a little bit on the weather. It's a little chilly up here in North Texas, actually 44. It did rain all morning. It's not raining right now in the afternoon, but the temperatures are going to be a little low here for the next two or three days. So we're going to be talking with George today about the Democrats' 2020 impeachment vote coming up tomorrow, and just generally see how what George thinks of our political situation in the moment. Let me say hello to our friend George. As I said, George, 44, and it feels like sweater time here in North Texas, George.
Well, it's 50 degrees here, and it feels the same way. It feels like a coat here because we've got some drizzle going on, and it feels a lot colder than that. You know, this when the humidity is high, the temperature kind of feels a lot worse, and it's cool outside, that's for sure.
Yeah, well, here it feels. Let me just quickly. It feels like 37, and it's 44, but it feels like 37 for the same reasons. You know, we had all this rain, and it's supposed to be very windy tonight. George. This may be, you know, with climate change ending in 10 years, the world ending in 10 years, maybe this is, we got to start counting down these shows, you know, like when we do these shows, we got to say show number 22 before the end of the world. We got to start doing that, George.
Yep. I agree. It's got to, we've got to start doing a countdown, maybe dropping a ball or something like that. But,
yeah,
like
that's right.
New Year's time.
If you think about it, 10 years, let's say we do two shows a month, that would be 20 a year times 10, that's 200. So let's just say this is show 200, counting down to the last one before we disappear in 10 years, George.
Yeah,
at least according to our newest environmental expert, Alejandra Ocasio-Cortez, George.
Well, and you know, you should have heard, there was a presentation last week here in San Antonio at our city council related to a local policies to work with climate change. Since President Trump took us out of the Paris Accord, a lot of folks are trying to do local efforts to save the planet.
I see.
Oh, my
and
goodness.
What are they
suggesting?
You should
have heard some of these characters just go on and
what
on.
What are some
of
their
world.
Suggestions? Yeah, what are some of their suggestions to save the planet? Why don't you give us a couple of things that you picked up down there?
Well, definitely one of them is to get us out of cars. We're
okay.
You know, we should not have cars anymore. Any petroleum based or propelled vehicles. That was number one. Number two is if we did get out of cars, not even electric cars would be good because the idea would be the best idea, they said, are you ready for this, is
yeah.
to not let people own private property because that way if you live in an apartment, all you have to do is just take care of a bush or a little plant in your house. So, you know, encouraging people to not have private property, not to have front yards, backyards, that would be
that's
a goal.
That's the key.
That's the key.
That and not having babies. I understand, too, that if you have babies want to have baby because apparently that contributes to carbon print or whatever. But it is really amazing to me how crazy this has become. And I say crazy because you can have a serious conversation about what is happening to the world, you know, the environment and all of that, and people can have a serious conversation about it. But when somebody tells me that the world is going to end in 10 years, George, they lose me, because that's just crazy.
Yeah, it is. Well, you know, you had one lady that was crying, just hysterically, because she's not going to be able to see her grandkids grow up. I mean, she was really crying hysterically over that. I thought, first of all, how is she scaring her grandkids by behaving this way? You know,
right.
What damage is she doing to them by carrying on this way? And then secondly, she doesn't need a politician. She needed a psychiatrist.
Yeah.
But,
well, it seems to me that if the world, in fact, was ending in 10 years, the last thing I'd be doing is scaring children. You know, why would I be scaring children? You know, because if you tell me that the world's going to end in 10 years and you tell your kids, then your kid's going to come back to you and say, Dad, why should I do my homework?
Exactly.
It's all going to be mute in 10 years.
Right.
So,
do I need to do anything other than just have a good time?
Yeah. Well, why even cut the grass, Dad? We're gone in 10 years anyway. So why cut the grass? Why do anything? Yeah.
It'd be a good thing, right?
That's right. But I do want to, you mentioned the climate, and I do want to obviously wish our friends in Southern California the very best. They're going through a very difficult situation right now, and we're going to try to do a show about it, George. But this is, there's a possibility that the Reagan Library could be overwhelmed by fire. They were showing some shots of the fires getting very close to the Reagan Library. And they had to evacuate the library. So that's pretty scary. I mean, when not just because it's Reagan, any library, any presidential library would be like that. It's just really scary to see what's happening out there. And I have to confess, I'm not very confident that the governor of California has a clue as to what's going on.
No, it's not. I mean, what they're suffering, and some of that was alluded to in our town hall meeting the other day here in San Antonio, was, you know, what they've done is they've instituted these radical policies in California where you can't use very much water to do many things, including fight fires. That's number one. Number two is that you don't cut back the undergrowth. You know, and the undergrowth has been, you know, naturally been burned off or been cut back in the past, but now it hasn't been happening for almost 20 years, and so you've got tinder all over the place. So, you know, a lot of these well-intended policies have worked against the idea of safety for Californians, ultimately,
right.
And it's really, really, you know, it's really, really sad that that's happening. But, you know, again, the base late plans of mice and men. You know, there you have it.
That's right. That's right. Well, we all have friends in Southern California, and obviously, we wish them the best. But I've seen some of the photos that they've put on Facebook, for example, and it's not a pretty scene. The other thing too is the lights keep going out. That's the other problem. The lights keep going out. And that is not fun. Not fun when your lights keep going out. I mean, it's one thing like we had here in Texas, these tornadoes here in North Texas. We had these tornadoes recently where, yes, there were sections of the city where trees came down and the power went out. I mean, yes, that did happen. But that's like, you know, an isolated thing. I mean, that's not, you know, it's not happening every night. You know, it's just an isolated consequence of a tornado. But in California, they're losing. I mean, you hear from people that, you know, they lose their power. I mean, these people who drive electric cars, they're the ones who seem to be suffering from it, because there's no way, I mean, unless you charge an electric car, there's no other way to move it. I mean, it's gasoline, at least. You can maybe stop at a gas station and get some gasoline, even if the lights are not out, are not on. But anyway, it's a scary situation, and we certainly wish the people out there the very best, George.
Yeah, we do. Prayers are with them.
Yes, that's right. Well, the Democrats are going to be taking a vote, an impeachment vote, they're not really taking an impeachment vote. I mean, they're playing a little word game here with us. It's not really an impeachment vote. Nobody's really voting yes or no on starting impeachment. It's kind of like, you know, a vote to decide how you're going to schedule the impeachment vote. Or, you know, it's one of those tricky little resolutions. And somebody pointed out, I think it was Newt Gingrich, who pointed out they're going to do this on Halloween Day, which I thought was kind of interesting. So on October the 31st, they're going to vote a resolution. Again, it's not a resolution of impeachment. It's more of a procedural vote that doesn't do anything other than just keep buying some time, George.
Yeah, I mean, it's the problem that we've got is that we're looking at a situation where the media and public opinion are being played for. I mean, there's nothing regarding a legal process that it's being followed here in the name of truth and justice. It's not. It's all politics, political theater. It's all political theater. And unfortunately, I mean, in the vast majority of people, just listening to polls, listening to people that I talk to, they don't understand what impeachment really means. They think that it means, you know, that once the House decides the House is going to remove President Trump and that's the end of it. Or they're going to convict him somehow of a crime and then they're going to be able to send him to jail. That's not how it works, and that's not what it is. It's a process, and that the process is being subverted, that the process is being ignored, that the process is completely out of whack. That's, you know, the only thing that I can, the only way that I can explain it is that, you know, to Texans, it's like you're playing a football game and one of the teams just refuses to follow the rules. Well, mm-hmm. then it's not a football game, is it? You can say that it's a football game, but it's not a football game.
Right. That's right. Yeah, well,
and
regardless of the pins, go ahead.
It's not going to matter because the other team, the one team that doesn't want to follow the rules, doesn't care to allow the other team to claim victory.
Right. And I really, you know, I would like to see, and I like to see the media come down hard on the Democrats for what they're doing. Because obviously we Republicans do it, but that's in the partisan arena. But I think the media could do the country a little favor here by basically asking Democrats, okay, but what exactly are you doing? Because you're not really voting. I mean, you're telling us this is an impeachment vote, but it's really not an impeachment vote because you remember the Clinton impeachment. What happened there is, yes, they had meetings. I understand that. But then one day they had a vote, an open vote in the House. Up and down vote, and you had to vote yes or no on whether or not to begin formal impeachment proceeding against President Clinton. There was a vote, majority voted, then a joint committee was formed or select committee was formed. Both sides participated, and then you remember, George, all those hearings. I remember watching a lot of them on C-SPAN. You know,
right.
Even in my office, I mean, I had this little TV and you could listen to it on C-SPAN. You can watch it. I remember a lot of the hearings that went on talking about whether or not what President Clinton did was impeachable or not. There was a lot of back and forth. There was a lot of people saying yes, a lot of people saying no, and it kind of went back and forth. And then yes, they took a vote. Then the Judiciary Committee wrote the articles of impeachment. Then the Judiciary Committee sent those articles to the House. And then once again, there was another vote. And this time they were actually voting on articles of impeachment. So everything was done out in the open. And that's what I like to see. I like to see the Democrats at least say, okay, we're going to vote for these articles of impeachment, and here are the impeachable offenses, the high crimes and misdemeanors that the president has committed, George. I haven't seen any of that, and, you know, I don't know that we will, George.
On the contrary, you know, the problem that I continue to see is two things. First of all, the lack of understanding or explanation by the media about what impeachment is and how it's supposed to work out, a complete lack of it. The second thing that I see is, you know, the game being played by the Democrats, in this whole situation, playing word games, playing politics. And while you've got that kind of a situation, while you've got, you know, a vast majority of people that just don't understand the process or what's going on. And while you've got one side playing politics that's beneficial to them, then we unfortunately are looking at a situation that is going to be much more divisive, continue to be much more divisive than a process that's going to help to bring about justice. It's not going to bring about justice. It's going to cause greater division.
Right. Well, that's my other problem with it. I mean, you have 50 Republicans in the Senate who have now basically signed a resolution condemning what the House is doing. And if that were to hold true, let's say the House writes these articles of impeachment. By the way, let me just say something else. I don't ever think that they will get to articles of impeachment because they don't have anything. So I think they're just playing this game. They're keeping the word impeachment out there, but they're never actually pulling the trigger, if I can say that in this politically correct world. And
really?
and they're just holding.
That?
I shouldn't say that. That's a bad example given political correctness. They cannot make a decision. I'll put it that way. And they're just pushing this further and further. But I see a couple of scenarios here, George, and I wanna get your reaction to this. Scenario number one is this goes to the House, the Senate. Okay, let's say it passes the House by whatever number, and then it gets to the Senate, and a Republican senator says, I make a motion to dismiss all of this, and just we're not going to even look at it. Well, first of all, that's what Senator Robert Byrd did in 1998 when he made a similar motion to dismiss the entire Clinton impeachment. That motion was rejected at the time, but at least you have now created the precedent that this can happen. So let's say a Republican makes that motion, it gets 50 votes, Pence breaks the tie. This whole thing, nothing happens, George. It goes right back to the House. And then what are you going to do, write more articles of impeachment? I don't think so, George. I think at some point people are going to realize that they don't have anything. That's kind of a long-winded way of telling you that story, George. And the second point that I want to bring up, and I want to get your thoughts on this too, is what happens to the Democrats? What happens to the House? What are they going to go back to the public and say, this is what we did for you? Because right now, there's nothing tangible that they've done. There's no piece of legislation that has come out of this House. Maybe a couple of minor things, but nothing of consequence that is coming out of this House that is becoming legislation that these people can run on, George. So a couple of things I want to get your reaction to, George.
Well, first of all, I think the situation. I think that if there is a vote in the House, I think that they will win it. The Democrats will win it, and they will, they will vote to go impeach. However, I think that before they get to that point, they will just beat this horse, this dead horse of impeachment, and try to find other things, and try to throw as many things against the wall to see what is going to stick before they move to that. I think that they've got they're really carrying on with this one character right now, this colonel that has showed up like the liberal version of Ollie North that has shown up, and they are they're carrying on about him, how wonderful and how he is a respected Purple Heart recipient and whatnot. They are going to look and throw as many things at the president as they can to see what's going to stick. Then they'll have the vote. Now, whether or not they put forward, it's going to pass because they are the Democrats. They control the House. It's going to go. Now, when it goes to the Senate, it'll be very, very interesting there because like you said, if they send it to the Senate right now, there are lots of senators that would stand up and defeat it, and it would be defeated, and it wouldn't go anywhere. So having said all of that, having said, that the House would vote for it and will support it and that they will push it forward if they feel confident in finding something that they can throw and stick, then at that point, anything the Senate does is going to be portrayed as partisanship. It's going to be attacked. It's going to be dismissed. And, you know, I just cannot begin to explain how divisive, how awful this is going to be for the country. It is really, really going to be bad.
Right, and that's exactly right, and that's the whole reason why I think this has to backfire on the Democrats. If you're going to go to this extent to accuse somebody of high crimes and misdemeanor, and it turns out you don't have anything, I think at some point that has to backfire on the people promoting this idea, because at some point people are going to say, okay, where's the beef? To, if you remember that political commercial from the 1980s, you know, where's the beef? Okay, so you want to impeach the president over this? Is that all you got? And that's why, you know, that's what would concern me. If I'm a Democrat in a competitive election, that's what would concern me in 2020. Now, a lot of them are in safe districts, so that's not going to matter one way or the other. But the ones in competitive seats, I would be a little worried about it, George.
Yeah, you know, that is something that should worry the Democrats in the House, and somehow there are very few of them speaking. There's very few of them being interviewed about that, and I think that there's very few of them that are willing to say how much they're scared of it.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, in the Senate, if it's sent to the Senate, one of the things that has to happen is that Bernie and Kamala and Corey and Oliver have got to come back from their campaign and deal with it. So how, you know, I guarantee that right now as we speak, these folks are telling Nancy, you know, don't do it, you know, delay.
Right. No, I think you're right, and I think instinctively, Speaker Pelosi probably doesn't want to do it. Either, because I think she knows the political downside to all of this. But I don't know. It looks like they're going to do something tomorrow. But from what I was reading, it's more of a procedural vote. It's more of one of these, you know, we're going to do this, and then we're going to vote on impeachment. Well, I don't know. I am of the opinion, George, that every Republican should simply stand up and say, we're not going to play in this charade. So, you know, unless you have an up and down vote on impeachment, we're just not going to play in this game. And I don't think the Trump administration should give up a document until there is an up and down vote on impeachment. Because what we're doing right now is really mocking the Constitution. I mean, you and I are old enough to remember Clinton. And even though Nixon never got to impeachment, I mean, there was clearly the information they were getting ready to write the articles of impeachment, but it never got there. But it certainly looked a lot more. It looked a lot. I just felt a lot that the system that we used in '98 and the system that we used in '74 was a lot more professional than what we're doing now, George.
Yes, by far. This is nothing but political theater. This is nothing but a show that's going on right now. And it's really sad because it's a mockery of justice. It's a mockery of the Constitution. It's a mockery of our nation.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, look, he's entitled to, President Trump is entitled to due process. He's entitled to at least know, you know, who's accusing him. What is he being accused of? I mean, right now we're just talking in generalities like, you know, abuse of power. Well, what abuse of power? Specifically, what are you talking about? And this is why I continue to say that this is all going to backfire on them, because they're going out there and making all kinds of comments. I just don't think that's going to play well with most people. Now, it'll play real well with the extreme left. I mean, they're going to feel really proud of themselves, but they've already got those votes. The people they got to get in the middle, they're the ones that I think are going to have
more. I'm not sure as we continue this, as this charade continues. I hate to say it, Sylvia, but I don't think it's about getting votes anymore. I think that to some people it's about trying to show the weaknesses of our nation and trying to destroy it accordingly.
Well,
I really do.
I wouldn't be surprised if some people are doing that. I don't think this is good for the country, because every other issue of importance is not being addressed. I mean, healthcare is not being addressed, and I think that's a major issue, not being addressed at all. I mean, we're not doing anything about that. We're not doing anything about, you know, the defense spending and the budgets and all the other things. Nobody's focusing on any of that, and those are, of course, are very important issues themselves. George, let me take a quick break, and then when we come back, I want to talk a little bit about 2020 and specifically the campaign of Julian Castro. There's some talk out there that he may be running out of money. Well, he sent out a text recently saying, I got to have $800,000 or whatever it was, or I'm going to have to shut down the campaign or at least not continue to operate. So we'll see what George has to say about that. But I do want to tell you about my friend Carlos Geddes, who is a musician. He's a great friend of our show. He's playing around town, and we have a link on the show information about Carlos. Click on that, and you'll be able to find out where he's playing and learn a great deal more about him, his music, and the different influences that made him the musician he is. We're going to take a little break. We're going to hear from some of Carlos' music, and we'll be right back. Music of my good friend Carlos Geddes from Venezuela, great artist, great friend of our show, and check out where he's at. You'll be able to listen to some great music when he goes around the Dallas area. Let's go back to our good friend in San Antonio, our friend George Rodriguez. George, one thing that I wanted to get your update on, or at least your whatever information you may have, we saw recently some information that Julian Castro was asking people for money. And the suggestion was, you know, if I don't get this money in 10 days, I'm, you know, we don't have the resources. I don't think they said it exactly that way, but that was, of course, the message between the lines. And what are you hearing about his campaign down in San Antonio? That's where he's from.
Well, two rumors that are running. First of all, his brother's escapade in criticizing the donors here in San Antonio that had sent money to Trump. These were big businesses that had sent, and it wasn't a lot of money. It was, you know, nominal amounts of money,
right.
$20,000, I think, was the most that they had sent to Trump. That Joaquin exposed, as he put it, made public. That really hurt. That really hurt Julian because it pulled a lot of support of private support from him because, you know, people were afraid of retaliation, or people were disgusted with his behavior. As it is, they are not very, very well liked and very well supported here in San Antonio. So when the word got out, his campaign started running very slow on funds, he initially he and his brother were going to knock on doors to some donors personally, but then all of a sudden, you know, the donors quit responding, and so Julian was faced with the decision of either to make public that he needs more money or to go ahead and run out of it because somebody would leak it. And so he ended up just going public and asking for more money and turning his campaign into a PBS begathon. And I am not too sure that he's gotten the money that he wants. Cory Booker had worked for Cory Booker a little bit, or at least I think it worked for him because he's still out there campaigning.
Right.
But this seems to be the new norm for a lot of these Democrat politicians, where they start to run out of money and then they go out and beg and say, you know, if you don't send me money, I'm going to have to pull the plug on my campaign. Well, you know, maybe that, you know, apparently they don't understand market forces. in a free market, which includes donating to campaigns,
right.
if you don't like the campaign, you don't donate. And going
right.
out and saying and begging for it, you know, it doesn't entice me to buy the product.
Right. No, I think you're right. You're exactly right. I wrote a post about Julian Castro and his request for money, saying that usually when a campaign doesn't have anything to say, it has a hard time getting contributions.
That's right.
Kamala Harris, I just saw a report before we went on the air that Kamala Harris is also cutting back staff because they're, you know, the money in does not match the money going out. The usual cash flow problem. I would argue, George, that I think what's happening with a lot of these Democrats is that they all basically sound the same. And, you know, you watch one of their debates and, you know, there's no disagreement really of any consequence. I mean, they may say something about each other, but if you recall the 2016 Republican debates, there was some real debate going back and forth there. I mean, some real disagreements. But with these Democrats, I mean, basically they all agree on the same thing. The basics, I mean, they all basically agree on the same thing. They might argue about details. But so what is, for example, the difference between Julian Castro and, let's say, Beto O'Rourke, George? Is there really any difference between them in terms of what they believe, George?
Not really. I mean, you know, you're hitting the nail on the head. You've got all of these talking heads, you know, but 28 of them, and all of them are saying, you know, basically the same thing. Only they're the only difference is they're trying to rush to the left, who can get to the left the fastest. And, you know, that's great if you're a far lefter. If you're a far leftist, that's wonderful. But if you're not, that limits your audience. That absolutely limits your audience. And, again, they just don't seem to understand market forces. They don't seem to understand commerce. They don't understand how to put together, you know, a pitch for the majority of the people, particularly Americans who love freedom and free markets. They just don't. I mean, you know, they're playing up their only message that seems to resonate with folks is fairness. Well, okay, what does that mean, fairness?
Right. Exactly, yeah. No, I think you're exactly right, George. I think they're appealing to it's all like they're all fighting for, you know, the people in the left-wing corner. But eventually, those people are going to have to, you know, they're going to have to come back to the middle at some point. But I will say one last thing, George, before we go. You may have heard this story. I have a post coming out about this tomorrow, that former Vice President Biden was in South Carolina, and he went to Mass.
Oh, yes.
And the priest refused to give him communion.
Correct.
Which I thought was extremely interesting that a priest would do that. In fact, I've said many times that priests need to start doing that with more frequency.
Yes.
Because I don't know how you can be a practicing Catholic and believe in abortion. But the real shame with former Vice President Biden, the real shame with him is that he was never really this radical in abortion before. In fact,
exactly.
He was one of, and yet this campaign has forced him to go in directions that must be very uncomfortable for him.
Well, it shows what a politician he is, because someone with convictions would stand on principles, on their principles.
Right.
This case, he's not. He's going along with the flow, and he,
right.
you know, it's clear that he feels uncomfortable with it.
Now, there's no question about it, and I'm sure he must have been caught by real surprise when the priest says, no, you're not going to get communion. I'm sure
that's
it must
right.
have been quite a shock for him. But, I mean, look, that's what happens. If you're out there
saying, a shock to the media. I mean, this morning I was hearing somebody defending him and saying that, you know, that the priest should not be judgmental. And I thought to myself, judgmental? I mean, that's the whole purpose of the last days. That's
right.
the whole purpose
well,
of going
I mean,
before the bar of God, at least for Christians.
Mean, that's right. I mean, if you're a Catholic, you know that the Catholic Church opposes abortion. I mean,
exactly.
That, I mean, I know that. I don't. That's not. They're not getting into politics. They're supporting life. They're not necessarily going one way or another on the political situation, but I just wish more priests would actually do that, because I think that I would love to see, for example, other Hispanic Democrats here in Texas be forced to say yes one way or the other. And I think they all hide between, you know, the Roe v. Wade decision. But we're not just talking about abortion in the abstract anymore. We're not talking about late-term abortion. And I think Democrats have to be confronted with that and forced to explain why a late-term abortion is somehow something. And the other thing, too, George, that I think the Republicans need to talk more and more to Hispanic families about is this whole question of boys who are playing in girls' sports.
Oh, yes.
I mean, you have girls' sports are now being, you know, destroyed by these boys who think they're girls, and they go out and they win tournaments. Did you see this, that the top female athlete of the week in one Colorado school or district was a boy who thinks he's a girl?
Yeah. I think that's, you know, I'm expecting that the top runner at a track meet is a guy who thinks he's a Miata, you know, and he's driving his Miata. It makes no sense. It is absolutely insanity. Absolutely.
It is insanity, because if you have a daughter and your daughter is competing in a, you know, track and field, and now she's, you know, before she used to compete against girls, and now she's competing against a boy who is faster and heavier and, you know, than she is. How is that fair to the girls? I don't think it is at all. I mean, I think boys are boys, girls are girls, and let's keep it that way, George.
Exactly.
My favorite.
A separate category for transgenders that are transitioning, then do that. But boys are boys and girls are girls.
Right. Yeah. That's a good idea. If you want to have a transgender Olympics, go right ahead and do it. But not the other. But my favorite picture of the week was there were like three or four pumpkins, you know, for Halloween. These, you know what I mean? They dress them up for Halloween, and then there was a basketball in the middle of it, saying this basketball identifies as a pumpkin.
I love it.
I got to give credit to our friend Leslie Eastman of Legal Insurrection for that one. But that was one of the funniest cartoons or images that I've seen. You've got these pumpkins for Halloween, you know, like the people put them out in the front yard, you know. And in the middle there's a basketball, similar color. And the basketball is saying, I identify as a pumpkin.
Good.
Sometimes these cartoons say it best, don't they? I mean, these cartoons say it. So, but again, I want to recognize my friend Leslie Eastman for putting up that image. Well, George, have a great day. Stay away from if you're getting what we're getting, you're going to get a lot of rain and some pretty chilly temperatures. So make sure your fireplace is running in case the lights go out.
Yeah, we're supposed to get rain all tonight and then tomorrow. And I think it stops. Friday morning.
Yeah, well, that's what we had. What we had is going down I-35 heading to San Antonio. So you're going to get what we had.
Maybe I'll go outside and build a snowman out of water.
That's not bad. Not bad. Or you can go outside and you say, I identify with Mary Poppins, and go up with your umbrella or whatever.
There you go.
There you go. All right, George, have a wonderful day, and thank you for
your
time.
You got it, buddy. Thank you. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for checking in with us. Our friend George Rodriguez, I'm sure all of you know George from South Texas, and you know his different, if you follow him as I do, his podcast, as well as his different speeches that he gives around town. And someone who's got a pretty good understanding of what's happening with the politics in the country. And we'll see where this impeachment vote goes. I just don't think people are going to... I mean, I think people are going to look at this impeachment vote and look at it and say, this is not really impeachment. This is a joke. You're playing a game with us. We'll see how it turns out. Thank you for your time. Have a wonderful day, everybody.